Welcome to Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis on KCRW, and we're just a couple of miles west of downtown LA. We're south of Wilshire Boulevard, and it's a part of the city filled with tightly packed apartment buildings built between the 1920s and the 1960s. These buildings in Koreatown are starting to show their age. As a matter of fact, there are some newer buildings, but the buildings in between those newer buildings, some of them could likely use a big facelift or perhaps even be torn down. And here we are smack in the middle of it at James M. Wood Boulevard and Fedora Street, KCRW, Saul Gonzalez. Saul, thanks for bringing me over here.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for coming.
Just west of downtown. Why did you tell me to meet you here?
Well, Steve, as you know, the 2020 U.S. Census is coming. Next year, the federal government will try to count every person living in the country as it does every 10 years, according to the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
And of course, there are all these concerns about whether or not we're going to have anything close to an accurate count, because the Trump administration wants to put a question on the census form asking people if they're U.S. citizens.
And yeah, there's a Supreme Court case about this, right? I mean, there's supposed to be a decision by the end of this month.
Yeah, and a lot of people are paying attention to it. And what the Supreme Court is partially weighing is whether that question is designed purely to scare people away from taking part in the census. Like, if you already have some fears about essentially registering with the U.S. government just by being counted in the census, you might have even more fears if the census asks whether you're a citizen or a non-citizen immigrant.
And I've heard all about that, Saul, but again, I ask, why are we here? Why did you bring us here to Fedora and Wood Boulevard?
Hold your horses. Here's your answer. Although it may not look it, Steve, this neighborhood is a battlefield in the fight over the 2020 census. We're standing right in the middle of what the U.S. government calls census tract number 2123.05.
Sounds very specific.
It's just a little patch of Koreatown, two blocks by two blocks, and about 3,000 people live here, most of them immigrants. And according to the census expert, Steve, this will be the very hardest to count place in all of Southern California when the 2020 census begins next year.
Really? Right here in this tiny area west of downtown LA?
Yeah, this really thoroughly normal-looking place, right? I mean, you would think the hardest to count place in, like, in all of California or one of the hardest to count places in the country would be some hole-in-the-wall place up in the mountains or in the desert. But yeah, it's right here. That's because when we've done the census in the past, people in this neighborhood have been the least likely to fill out census forms. So just think about it, Steve. If there's a citizenship question on the census form this time around in 2020, they'll likely be less inclined to fill out a census form.
All right, since we're out here, Saul, why don't we see if some folks in the neighborhood want to talk to us about what they think about this question possibly being included on the census form?
Let's do it.
Hey, sir. You mind if we talk to you for a second from public radio? KCRW?
Yeah.
We're doing a story about the United States Census.
Okay.
And people getting counted. Uh-huh. What's your dog's name?
Sally.
Sally. Oh, good girl, Sally. Hi, Sally. Don't be scared of us. We're talking about whether people... This is one of the hardest places to count in the United States of the census. And now we've got the Trump administration that wants to add the citizenship question to the form. You know about it?
Yeah.
What do you think about it? Oh, Sally's going to attack. Sally's going to attack. Sally... How about if I extend my arm like that and hopefully I won't pull back a nub?
Yeah, I think it's stupid. Yeah.
You think it's stupid? Yeah. Why do you think it's stupid?
Because it's going to scare people not to answer like the questions, and you know, it's just going to alienate people more, you know. So, yeah, pretty much.
Do you think, I mean, it's going to alienate people. Do you think people will not want to answer the question?
Exactly, yeah.
Or fill out the form?
Yeah. So I think, and then they won't get the representatives that they need, or like we won't get the actual funds or representatives that we need for, you know, our area, or you know.
What are you doing anything about that? Like if you think it's so stupid, are you telling people, hey, you got to fill out the census form?
No, not really. Yeah. So.
Do you want to do that, or?
I mean, I let friends know, or like people like that run into, you know, just like, hey, just fill it out. I'm pretty sure they're not going to use it against them, so. You know.
You don't think the government would use it against... You think it's just a ploy to get fewer
people?
Yeah,
like fear, I guess a fear tactic, yeah.
Yeah. What's your name?
Sal Verduzco.
Sal Verduzco.
Yeah,
Sal,
yeah.
S-A-L.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sal.
No,
bye, Sally.
No,
Sally. I think Sally was about to have me for lunch, so...
I wouldn't take it personally, Steve. What's your name?
I'm Robbie.
Robbie...
Pacheco.
Do you think if people got something from the government... that said, hey, We want to know your citizenship status in this country, and please fill out this census form at the same time. Do you think a lot of people would go for that?
No. I think they'd be scared to even share their status because of everything that's been going on also. You know, people are just scared to come out, and, you know, they're scared of what's going to happen to them.
And I bet even if they're citizens themselves, there's a lot of mixed status families here, right? Like some people are citizens, other people may be undocumented.
Yeah, I know my family's like that too. I was born here. But even so, I'm scared to like disclose information of my family because of what might happen to them. So.
And we also talked to Lucila Lopez, another resident here, who says Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric makes it more likely people won't want to participate in the census.
Como él habla, es como intimidar a la gente. Entonces, yo pienso que mucha gente no va a querer, verdad, que lo incluya en el conteo del censo.
Porque pienso. Tienen miedo.
Porque tienen miedo, ajá.
No quieren nada del gobierno.
No quieren nada porque la verdad, la mayoría de la gente, de nosotros los hispanos, estamos nos asusta, verdad.
What she's saying, Steve, is that, you know, she's afraid Trump is trying to intimidate people from not being included in the census. I asked her why, and she says because they're afraid. They don't want anything to do with the government, particularly if it involves counting them.
So you can hear, Saul, why the census takers are concerned about people like Ms. Lopez and other folks who we've talked to.
Yeah, and let me tell you a little bit more about this census tract, Steve. More than half the people here are immigrants. They mostly don't speak English at home. Most of them speak Spanish or Korean. About a third of the residents here live below the poverty line. And those factors make this neighborhood what's called hard to count. That's in a kind of an official census term. And there are lots of others like them across Los Angeles and across Southern California.
All right, Saul. So then I'm going to ask the question, and maybe it's a silly one. Why does this even matter? Why do we care whether the census is accurate at all? I mean, what's at stake if, say, people in this neighborhood in Koreatown and so many others around Southern California, what if they don't get counted?
It comes down to two words, power and money, Steve.
All right, let's start with power then. The census is used to decide how many seats we get in Congress, right? And right now there are 53 California representatives in Washington, D.C.
Right, but an undercount could cost California 1, 2, maybe even up to 3 seats on Capitol Hill. It happened before. In the 1990 census, they tried a new system of counting people, and they really screwed up badly, and they think that cost L.A. County maybe a seat, maybe 2 seats in Congress.
All right, you mentioned power and money. What about the money portion of this? Would the state get less money?
Hundreds of billions of dollars are at stake here. Federal money that's used to pay for everything from mass transit projects to funding for community healthcare clinics. Let me just play you a bit of tape of Mayor Eric Garcetti. I caught up with him a while back to talk to him about the census, and this is what he said.
People don't think we're here, then the formulas for federal funding means you pay taxes to Washington, but you don't get that money back. About $2,000 per person, $1,950 per person on average.
And Garcetti says the Trump administration basically wants to weaponize the census by doing everything possible to sabotage an accurate count of people in blue states and cities like California and L.A. Again, here's the mayor.
No question. This has been a hostile Washington that decides how you voted and then figures out whether they want to give you funds. And I think they know if they can change the formula with the census, they can make sure that more money is kept for them that we generate and less returned to us.
So, Saul, if that's the danger, what's the state? What's the city? What are they doing about it?
Well, quite a lot. Now, keep in mind, the federal government is responsible for the census and for census outreach. But in the next year or so, California is really going to step up in a big way. It's prepared to spend as much as $150 million on its own census outreach and education efforts, just to make sure as many people as possible get counted. And it will share some of those funds with the city and county of L.A. Of course, if a citizenship question does make it on the form, L.A. will have to work that much harder to convince people to participate, especially in places like this place, census tract number 2123.05.
And here we are in the middle of it at the corner of Fedora and James M. Wood Boulevard, KCRW Saul Gonzalez. Thanks for meeting me here.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the Commerce Department, which oversees the census, is out today with an unofficial sample questionnaire that actually asks the citizenship question to see who will respond to it next year or not. Yesterday, President Trump invoked executive privilege. He did it to block the release of documents showing why the White House decided to include the citizenship question on next year's census form. To be continued, of course. Just ahead on Greater LA, you know you're home when you see that flying saucer-like building at the airport, but what will come of the now idle theme building? There are ideas flying around. You're going to hear some of them coming up. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're back with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It looks like a big, white, flying saucer that landed on its four legs. And if you've taken off or touched down at LAX just in the past 50 years, chances are you've noticed it. The theme building has been an icon of Southern California mid-century modernism since it was built back in the early 1960s. And although you can admire it from the outside, you cannot actually go inside. Its big glass-walled dining room and observation deck have been essentially closed to the public for years. But perhaps that might change. The city of LA has invited interested companies to submit ideas for what to do with the whole central area of LAX, and that includes the theme building. The deadline is set for tomorrow. Linda Dishman heads up the LA Conservancy, which works to preserve historic places within LA County. Linda, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We know that the theme building looks unique, but what makes it historic sort of in the scope of LA architecture?
Well, the theme building is just one of the most iconic buildings in Los Angeles, and it's the one that everyone is familiar with because, you know, most people fly in and out of LAX at some point and they see the building. So it's a building that everybody knows and loves. And what makes it so special is it just looks different from any other building. It, you know, it's sort of these two intersecting arches. It has a different look. It really is playful and futuristic at the same time and is very much about the optimism of the 1960s.
What was it originally built for back in 1961?
It was very much intended to be part of the architecture of the whole airport. In fact, the architects, Pereira and Luckman, who designed the theme building, also were responsible for doing the whole master plan for LAX. It was built as a restaurant with an observation deck on the top floor, and then on the first floor and the basement, there originally was service for the employees at LAX, both a cafeteria, and then they did a lot of the food service preparation there.
You have any personal stories of going inside that building? Have you ever been inside?
Yes, I used to go to the restaurant. I loved it.
What was it like when you walked inside? I mean, did you ever get like excited about going to the airport restaurant? I mean, that sounds weird, doesn't it?
Well, the encounter, particularly when it first opened, was really an exciting, different place to go. And so, and obviously seeing all the planes come in and out, it was fun. And it was a place that, you know, on more than one occasion, I met people that had long layovers. You know, so friends that were flying from New York to Hawaii would have a long layover and, you know, you'd be able to meet and have a fun lunch or a fun dinner, and then they would get back on the plane.
All right. So a restaurant it became. We had the observation deck. When and why did that restaurant shut down?
Well, I think that people just didn't find it convenient to go anymore with the new rules after 9/11, with the really, high security. You never knew how long it was going to take to go, through security. So a lot of the natural market of people going to the restaurant faded away because people just didn't want to miss their planes.
And even before that, the theme building shut down for some structural reasons, I understand.
Yes, there was a chunk of plaster that fell from one of the arches, and the airport, to their credit, did a great job at doing a seismic retrofit of the building and repairing all of the surface covering on the arches.
What's inside there right now? If I were at the airport and I wanted to go check things out, could I get inside there?
Well, the Bob Hope USO is on the ground floor. So if you're active in the military, you certainly can go into the USO space. And the rest of it is not open to the public at this point.
LAX, as you know, isn't the only airport trying to revive these buildings that have been somewhat abandoned. I know we've heard about in the past JFK and the old TWA terminal there. They've made it into a hotel, a really swanky hotel over at the airport there. Is LAX trying to do something similar?
Well, I think that LAX is in the middle of their master plan implementation, and they're looking at being the most innovative they can in terms of making the best airport for the people of Los Angeles. So they're taking this seriously, and they do want to find a good use for the building.
I think of LAX and I think of traffic, just being stuck trying to take someone to the airport or drop them off or pick somebody up. It's just hard to get in and out of there anyway. And I wonder if they make the theme building something more of a tourist attraction, whether that would make it worse.
Well, the good news is that the airport, as part of their master plan implementation, is actually most of the traffic will not be coming into the airport anymore, that all of the passengers will be dropped off outside of the airport and take a people mover system into the airport itself.
What do you think should happen to this thing? I mean, obviously you want to preserve this iconic building. What should go inside of it?
Well, I think the good thing about the request for interest that the airport issued is that it's not just the theme building. It also includes the original tower for, you know, looking at all the airplanes coming in. But also it has an additional space where new construction could occur. There could be a hotel. There could be some other kind of facility there. So I think it's interesting that the airport wanted to look at this as broadly as possible and not just do a request for another restaurant operator.
You think something will come of it, or do you think it'll just languish because it's just been sitting there for a long time?
I think this is a good first step, and we'll see what happens.
The Conservancy, obviously, Linda, is a place that tries to preserve historic places all across the area. And you probably have a keen interest in what happens to the theme building. What will you guys be looking for?
We will be looking to make sure that the theme building stays as the icon that it is, which is not to say that change can't happen or there wouldn't be new construction, but that it does remain sort of the crown jewel in the airport.
Linda Dishman over at the LA Conservancy. Linda, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, coming up right on the across the way from the airport, on the heels of big change, the city of Inglewood's restaurant scene is also seeing some ups and downs. That's yours next on KCRW's Greater LA. This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. As we've reported on this program, there's a lot of change happening in the city of Inglewood. It's getting a big new football stadium, new metro stations, it's gentrifying, rents are going up, and all those things are squeezing out some longtime residents and some longtime restaurants, too. Mona Holmes writes for Eater LA. She's a contributor here on Greater LA. She's been keeping an eye on the food scene in Inglewood. Hi, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
So what are some of the longtime Inglewood eateries that are, I mean, are they struggling to stay in business with all this change happening in the neighborhood?
They are. And some of them are absolute pillars of the community that everyone really knows. Like Miss B's M&M Soul Food is probably the most well-known. And Beverly Brinson owns it, and she's from Mississippi. It's been around for 26 years now. And her biggest issue is that because she is less than a block away from the Forum, which is right next to the new forthcoming stadium, is that her landlord keeps saying that he's going to increase the rent or says that he has a new buyer, and which is putting her in the worst position of feeling completely insecure of whether she'll be open or not. Another one that comes to mind is Lee's Jamaican, which is the second that you walk outside of his front door, you can actually see the entire stadium, and it's quite a sight. And he's been there since 1992. When I say he, I'm talking about Owen Sutherland, who owns the place, who was a tailor who decided to get into the restaurant business because a friend of his told him to. And since then, he's been making oxtails, Jamaican patties, things that are absolutely traditionally Jamaican. But his biggest issue is that he has a landlord that refuses to fix anything. And so there's issues with air conditioning and all kinds of other items, or a problem with the ceiling. And I found that that tends to be a trend with some of the other restaurants that are trying to stick around, with landlords that aren't necessarily cooperating because they know what's coming.
I listed this whole litany of things happening in Inglewood. We talk about, you know, the big stadium happening, but there were also some changes happening even before the stadium was announced. Like, what were some, and I'm talking about Hollywood Park, of course.
Mm-hmm. I remember when Hollywood Park was all of a sudden demolished, and that actually wound up having a huge impact on another restaurant called the Bourbon Street Fish Grill. He is one on the other side of the spectrum from Lee's Jamaican and Miss B's, because he owns the building. And that seems to make a huge difference for anyone who's experiencing some kind of gentrification.
Well, let's talk about that, because this is akin to, like, instead of renting your apartment, you own your home, right? And so you benefit when you own that property, as opposed to you're the one who gets forced out or perhaps have to pay a lot more money.
Oh, for sure. When I met the owner of Bourbon Street Fish Grill, he was talking about these grand plans. It's a one-level building that he wanted to completely change and turn into a second floor. I mean, he has the benefit of being able to do whatever he wants to his very large lot. And it's the same for another restaurant like Doulon's, where they own the building. And so for them, the property values are definitely going up. There's also the Crenshaw line that's going to be happening, which will make it far easier for people to get there. And so, yeah, they definitely have a benefit of being able to potentially weather the storm, because the other part of this, too, is that it's not nearly as busy because of the construction. And that's posing a challenge for anyone, whether they're renters or owners.
I was just on the 105. I could see actually the stadium going up.
It's stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It's a lot going on over there. And I mean, I wonder, all those places, they're weathering the storm. Are there places that will thrive or are thriving right now despite what's going on over there?
I absolutely believe they are.
Yeah.
There's a new place called Sip and Sonder, and it's a cafe, and they only launched late 2018. And the cafes in South LA tend to be mostly corporate. And so they wanted to put a little local flavor on it. The two owners are practicing lawyers who just wanted to open a space that was all about cafe culture. And they read the neighborhood correctly, because every time I drive by there, there's always people in it. In addition to that, they also have art showings and community gatherings. It's pretty spectacular. But on that area of Market Street, there's a ton of places that are doing really well. The LA Philharmonic is building a youth center one block away from them on Market Street. And there's another indication that the neighborhood is shifting. There's a bunch of art galleries that are also coming.
With all these changes happening, are people being resilient, trying to stem the tide, trying to keep some of the history of a city that has seen so much change?
Well, I'd point directly to Crowns and Hops.
Yeah.
And they are not a brick and mortar yet, but they're a group of people that are just beer enthusiasts. And all that they wanted to do was open up a place that could truly represent the area, which is traditionally working class and Black and Latino. And so they started an Indiegogo earlier this year, which well exceeded the amount. And all they wanted to do was open up this place in Inglewood and not just have it be a brewery, but also a tasting room and potentially a restaurant. And I definitely see them as the type of business that's fighting back against this.
And that's likely to happen, do you think?
When I spoke to them, they said they needed to hit their goal to make it happen. And so since it did, I'd say that it's going to happen.
Brick and mortar is tough, though, right?
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's the worst. And to make a brewery, something of that magnitude, something of that size, is going to be very challenging. But when it opens, they say that it's going to be right across the street from Inglewood City Hall, and we'll have to wait and see how that goes.
Give us a couple of recommendations. We talked about all of these folks who have either had a struggle or who are perhaps thriving in this new Inglewood. What are some recommendations that you have?
Well, I definitely tell people to go to Miss B's M&M Soul Food, because they're just wonderful. But there's another one of my favorite spots that's highly unusual called Equilequa Cuban Cafe. And this place is actually a vegan Cuban restaurant. I know that completely turned off some ears right now, but it is stunningly good. And they've been there for at least 8 years. And what they do is put their vegan or meatless spin on Cuban food. There's also the absolutely incredible Connie Seafood, which is a classic. They've been around for 25 years, and I believe that they do some of the best seafood in the city.
Mona Holmes, who's a writer for Eater LA, contributor here at Greater LA. Thanks, Mona.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, that is the show for today. If you want to check out some of Mona's restaurant recommendations, you can find them at our website, kcrw.com/GreaterLA, or subscribe to the podcast, available where you get your podcasts at Greater LA. Next week on the program, how the Trump administration could force non-American citizens out of public housing. And you can see both sides of a potential schism over gay clergy and gay rights in the Methodist Church right here in Greater LA. Coming up next on KCRW, The Bookworm, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, and Christian Bordahl make this program happen. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being here. We'll see you again next week.